Radio Free Press, a podcast from the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom, campaigning for free, independent and accountable media.
After a year which saw the biggest trade union protest in a generation, as public sector workers demanded protection for their pensions, the Trade Union Congress is preparing to face 2012 and a set of challenges as great as anything that they had to endure in the decade of Margaret Thatcher's government. Top of the agenda are moves by the Conservative Liberal Democrat coalition government to end national wage bargaining in many public services and instead perhaps introduce regional pay rates. There are also threats to long-standing conditions of employment at work. Of perhaps even greater long-term concern is the threat to the trade union movement's very day-to-day existence, the removal of the agreements under which work representatives get their wages paid while on trade union duties during working hours. We see the trade unions back in what could become a rerun of the dark days of the 1980s. Yet again, the economic and political climate doesn't augur well for those advancing the case for organised labour. And what cannot be ignored either is that union membership is half what it was 30 years ago. Against that daunting backdrop is another difficulty, a hostile environment in much of the news media. With me to discuss the challenges faced by the TUC in presenting the case to the public are Nigel Stanley, the TUC's Head of Campaigns and Communication, and Liz Chinchin from the Union Movement's Press and Campaigns Office. Let's begin by reviewing last month's nationwide day of action and protest over the changes to public sector pensions. Nigel Stanley, how do you assess the impact of that campaign?
Well, this was clearly the biggest work stoppage for a generation, possibly ever on a single day. No one quite knows how many people went on strike during the general strike. We reckon somewhere between 1.5 million and 2 million people stopped work. It was also a very different feel to the dispute than previous ones as well. And the comparison that many people in the media are making with the winter of discontent. But I was looking at a picture of the march that took place on the first day of the winter of discontent and the strikes that started. And at the front of the march, it was all men. And behind it, it was all men. This was clearly the biggest strike ever for women in Britain. And I think that much of the media, when they actually explored who was on strike and why, found this out. This wasn't macho men in a 1980s confrontation. It was dinner ladies and nurses and health workers and lollipop ladies standing up for something they thought they'd secured and been promised. There had a rather different feel to it.
So do you think that the fact that so many of those who were losing a day's pay to make their point were women, do you think that that had an effect on the news media in the way they treated and reported what was happening?
I think it did, because I think a lot of the news media, even ones that try to be objective, still tend to think in stereotypes, and they'll balance one stereotype with another. And they found it very hard to slot this dispute into previous stereotypical views of campaigns. And particularly if you watch the rolling news channels, it was very interesting because they started off in the morning, as you'd expect, with location reports and talking to people on picket lines, although even calling them a picket line is to some extent the wrong image, but people making their point at their workplaces. And they were letting the strikers tell their stories, particularly during the morning before the kind of political show, the Westminster Village had kind of woken up and got going with this. And then during the day it got much more trapped within the old stereotypes. A government news machine got in on the act. There were more, and it also got taken over by the political correspondents, who view everything through a Westminster Village prism. When they were kind of ordinary journalists, the few industrial correspondents that left, general news reporters, they saw the human interest story, and that's when we got our message across most strongly.
And do you feel then that this then didn't produce some of the knee-jerk anti-trade unionism, anti-trade unionist coverage, which of course dominated the 1980s, when so many trade union members and activists were demonised in the press, especially in some of the tabloid press.
I'm not saying that there weren't hostile stories in the media. I mean, one could only look at the Express and the Mail and the People You'd Expect. The Prime Minister tried to write it off as a damp squib, and that got some pickup. But it was, I think they found it much harder to run those stereotypes. And I think those media outlets that tried to be a bit more objective or a bit more balanced found it even harder to put things there. And the fact is that in the end, the Prime Minister had to say it was ineffective rather than a vicious conspiracy against the British way of life or something like that is an indication that the old stereotypes didn't work for him either.
Well, if you see some comfort in the way in which the media have responded in comparison to what was happening in the 80s, how do you think that that's going to translate to these challenges that you see in 2012? Because if we look at what's stacking up, the trade union movement really does face, doesn't it, some pretty stark threats, that end to perhaps national pay bargaining, the weakening of employment rights, the very attack on the fabric of the union movement, if subsidies to help pay for union activists are removed at work. That's a pretty big shopping list against you, isn't it?
It is, and I think the way that we tackle that is to put it within a much wider story of the government attacking people at work in general, because it's not just unions that they want to attack. People who work for small businesses, who actually tend to be the least unionised section of the workforce, face a huge attack on their rights at work. There's a huge lobby within government to say that people who work for small companies shouldn't really have any employment rights at all. They have qualifying period for unfair dismissal is being raised to 2 years. The programme to auto-enrol people into pensions for small businesses has been delayed for a year. There have been attacks on maternity rights. These are all things that resonate well beyond the trade union movement.
But how are you going to get that across and communicate?
I think our campaign has to be based on that starting point, that what the government is trying to do is to attack the rights of people at work. They're doing it in the name of economic efficiency and economic growth, but I don't think people believe that. And indeed, we've just done a poll that shows that 70% of the population are opposed to attacks on workplace rights in the name of economic efficiency and economic growth. And so we've got a good starting point with public opinion there.
And do you think that the media today provides the sort of platform that you will clearly want?
There are parts of it that do. I think it's very hard to get our message in. I think it's hard to break out of those stereotypes. But that's our professional challenge as campaigners and as press officers to make that case. But as you say, we face an uphill struggle and there is a very strong voice, even within the BBC, that views anything to do with the workplace through a business prism or a city expert prism, which often excludes, actually, not just the voices of ordinary working people, but I don't hear many small manufacturing companies in the Midlands on the radio either, though I hear an awful lot of people from city institutions being introduced as authoritative, neutral experts on the television and radio, when clever, interesting voices that should be heard, they are, but impartial, they ain't.
When you talk there about the fact that there is this difficulty that you face with traditional media, not just press, but also television, as you say, and radio. What about the new media, the social media? Are you managing, do you think, to keep up with the way in which it's quite clear that many, many young activists are now motivated? They've almost become like an online army of insurgents. And I don't think myself that perhaps the trade union movement is breaking through there.
I think you're right. I think this is a big challenge. I think in some ways the TUC itself is in a slightly better position because we're quite a small organisation in terms of our staff and our structures. And we can operate sometimes in a quicker and more informal way. Traditional unions are really rather hierarchical. They have general secretaries and executives and regions and committees and right at the end of the chain. And they're rather traditional hierarchical organisations. And that has huge strength because it provides continuity and history, and you can be sure they'll still all be here in a year's time. Whilst lots of more insurgent network campaigns can be very effective for a bit, but then tend to be like shooting stars and they might not be here in a year's time. So I think the trick is to combine the two. What's good about trade unions and the strength, and the fact it was only traditional trade unionism that could get more than a million and a half people out on strike, with the immediacy and efficiency and the excitement of the new media as well.
But if you look at two of the challenges you face, for example, the question of national pay, defending national pay rates throughout the country. If you look at youth unemployment, a million young people unemployed. Now, it would strike me that both of those were capable of being issues which could be part of a campaign that wouldn't just be a shooting star, but which would go on for a very long time. Yes. Because believe me, if people feel in different parts of the country that they're going to lose their national pay rates, that's going to be a massive challenge for you, isn't it?
I think that's absolutely right. And I think a huge weakness for the government that they've not thought of is that they run the risk of repeating what was one of the things that brought down the Conservative hegemony and regime in the 80s and 90s, was this feeling that they were a government for the South East, by the South East, and they didn't really like people in the North and in Scotland. And that led to a collapse in the Conservative vote outside London, the South East and a few prosperous areas, and was one of the things that kept them out of power for a long time. And I think you're absolutely right, but this is the point of weakness. And when I say that social media campaigns can come and go like shooting stars, I don't think the issues that they do, I think the form that they take, you'll get a particular way it shoots off here will be one thing, but if the issue doesn't go away, then it will provoke something else, and then something else, and something else again, which is why I think the continuity that unions and more traditional organisations can provide, the kind of backbone and resource base and knowledge base and research base and think tank role we have in developing the best arguments can work with that and reinforce that. So take, for example, perhaps the furthest away from a trade union campaign has been the growth of UK Uncut. Here are people doing things that unions don't do, kind of some of it probably illegal, but on the subject of tax avoidance by big companies. Now, who did the research on tax avoidance by big companies? It was the TUC. So we seed the ideas, we seed the campaigns, we campaign in our own way, but they're often picked up in social media, take off and develop a life of their own, which we would not have seen, we would not have predicted, but have turned out to be really rather effective in producing a campaigning voice.
If we look at another area, for example, youth unemployment, where we have a generation, a million young people, who are very conversant with social media, with tweeting, with mobile phones. Liz Chinchin, as someone who's dealt with some of these new emerging campaigns for the TUC, what's going to be the trick then, do you think, in communicating with those young people?
I think the trick to communicate with young people is to kind of use the mediums that they use with their friends, and also to try and use language which they understand. And I think more and more we're trying to do that. I think the difficulty is a lot of young people don't read traditional media, so a lot of people have been doing things that constantly will be the way we've always done them, and all of a sudden we're now having to look to do things in a different kind of way. We're getting there, but it takes a long time.
If you look, for example, at the Occupy London Stock Exchange protest, there's an illustration, isn't it, of something which managed to excite the media in a way which has often been difficult, hasn't it, for the trade unions over a sustained period. What do you think, for example, I'll start with you, Liz, what do you think was the success and has been the success of that sort of protest that is an issue protest, which is much more difficult, isn't it, for the trade union movements to actually come up with as they have done?
I think the interesting thing with that is obviously it was something something that happened elsewhere, and then it came to London, and it was very different. People setting up tents outside a well-known London landmark, and I think often the media didn't really know what happened, and so they cover it because it's different. And then organisations like the union movement, who are maybe not as kind of as far along in those kind of ways of campaigning, will then perhaps go down and visit and will obviously kind of applaud some of the motives, clearly not the law breaking, but, you know, will applaud some of the motives. But when we're looking at traditional issues, like, for example, public sector pensions, I'm not sure how you would do something similar with that.
No. Now, when it comes to the other challenges that you face, Nigel Stanley has been describing how, for example, with the protests over pensions, what came through the media, and the media had to recognise, was that many, many of those who were out losing a day's pay were women. So there is a change, isn't there? A fundamental change in what was happening now, what's happening now, and what was happening back in the 80s. How have you seen it on the front line, speaking up for the TUC?
Well, I think the interesting thing really was that, I mean, in terms of the coverage in the lead up to the dispute, but also after the day of action, is that there was some good coverage. There was good coverage in The Guardian, for example, and on Channel 4 News. But the papers who you wouldn't expect to cover it sensibly didn't cover it, and they covered it the way they wanted to. So the people who I met when I was out and about on picket lines with Brendan, who were middle-aged women who'd never ever been on strike before in their lives, who, you know, had major kind of challenges with their consciences about whether or not they should go on and, you know, take a day's strike action, that really didn't come over in the media, I don't think, or it only came over in certain sections of the media. And I think that is a problem. In a sense, you know, we did lots of stories in the run-up to the day of action, stories that involved lots of research, you know, that Nigel had been involved in, and they got some pick-up, but they got no pick-up in any of the papers who were absolutely determined there was only one story to be written about public sector pensions, and that was irresponsible strike, militants, blah, blah, blah.
Now, looking ahead to 2012, Nigel has been explaining how he agrees that the big challenges are going to be, for example, the threat to national pay bargaining, the possibility of an undermining of employment rights, this attack on trade union activists, in the sense that people who are representatives for their union at work might no longer find that can be paid for by the employer. Do you see as well that you seem to be facing up to having to withstand some quite severe challenges against perhaps the backdrop of a hostile media?
Yeah, I mean, clearly there are going to be some significant challenges ahead, but I think the thing that we can do is to kind of go behind the stories and to try and find the individuals who are actually doing, who are working as full-time officials and who aren't just sitting around doing union stuff, but are actually working on behalf of all of the people in that organisation, the employer as well as their workmates, you know, making the workplace safer, making it so that people can be better trained and actually kind of show that there is a lot of good going on. Now, clearly, that's going to be a challenge to get that reported in certain sections of the media, but we need to do that and we need to focus on the people, because that's ultimately what will show the value of the stories that we're trying to promote, really.
Nigel Stanley, looking ahead to 2012, Liz has just been explaining how she believes the union movement can respond. What's your wish from the journalists of the United Kingdom as we look ahead to the challenges that Liz has just been mentioning?
One thing I would hope for is just a bit more knowledge about the workplace and the trade union movement amongst journalists. I mean, the biggest trend in the kind of coverage that we get is there's been a decline in the industrial correspondent, the people who really understand unions. I mean, it's it's during the process of negotiating on pensions, the questions that we would have got 20 years ago from industrial journalists who would understand how negotiations work, and the fact that you don't provide day-by-day, ball-by-ball reporting on what's going on within them, because that actually makes them very hard to achieve success in, will be very helpful. A bit more knowledge of how the workplace works. And I mean, many journalists are very well-intentioned, and it's not as if they've kind of got a particular agenda, and often will try, and even when they've got news desks who have, try and subvert that in some way, but they often don't really have the basis of knowledge of how these things work. So that would be good. And I think the other thing would be, and this is completely wishful thinking, is that journalists would have enough time to do stories properly. So often you get the feeling that all they can do is sit at their desk, absorb a few press releases, make a few calls. They don't get out, they don't meet people, they don't meet the people, the middle-aged women going on strike for the first time, because they have to kind of stay there and in case there's breaking news and something exciting. So you don't get a lot of the kind of more human coverage that actually brings these stories alive for readers and viewers and listeners, as much as it helps us get across that this is a story about real people in their millions and what's happening to them, not about institutions, known unions, fighting the government or fighting employers, because that's the kind of the lazy stereotype.
Mm. Now, Liz Chinchin, you have to deal on the phone, I expect, and out on events with many, many journalists. What's your wish for 2012, bearing in mind, as I said, that it looks as though the TUC is going to be having to react in a potentially hostile economic and political climate?
I mean, I would say, all of the journalists, most of the journalists, I should probably qualify, who we deal with, they're always really pleasant, they always listen to what we say, but sometimes it would be good that when we have spent a long time on the phone with journalists, that they actually do kind of credit what we say or actually kind of use the quote that they've asked for. I mean, I would kind of add to what Nigel said about the kind of lack of knowledge. I mean, the number of journalists who would ring up kind of saying, well, how many people are going to be on strike in Derby tomorrow? How many people are going to be out? Could you give me a map of all the picket lines that will be tomorrow? I mean, just that complete lack of kind of understanding, which can be really frustrating. I mean, the media office at the TC in the run-up to the Day of Action was almost crazy. There were times when we were hysterical. There were so many calls coming in. I don't think in all the kind of years I've worked in the media, which is, some 20-odd years, I've ever been as busy. But it was challenging, and we constantly kept taking the calls. But I think, I did find it a really rewarding exercise. And I suppose my plea to journalists is really kind of maybe think before you ask the question. And if you are going to ask the question, maybe at least give us the benefit of giving us the space that, our answer requires, really.
But you both agree, do you, that it's going to be a bit of a daunting year, 2012?
Well, the government is moving from its position where it wanted to be seen as nice and friendly and cuddly, and I think the pressure of events means that it has come to the conclusion that attacking rights at work, attacking trade unions, looks like they're doing something about the economy. Now, most economists, even right-wing economists, will tell you that actually it won't make any difference at all to jobs and growth, but that's why we've got a big battle in the year ahead.
Well, are you manning the barricades again then?
I'm looking forward to a very challenging year. Very challenging, very interesting year.
Well, my thanks to Nigel Stanley and to Liz Chinchin at the TUC's Campaigns and Communications Department. This podcast was produced for the campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom by Claire Collier.